Peter R. Breggin, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT, and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour.
Hello, this is Peter Breggin, Dr. Peter Breggin. I'm a psychiatrist, and I'm really delighted to be here with Patrick Coffin and with all of you at the COVID-19 and the Great Reset Conference. I like the title, Truth Over Fear, because truth over fear is really the story of our lives if we're functioning at, I think, the optimum level, because life is very, very challenging, and never more so than now. I'd like to begin with the thought that we should be really proud to be alive today. If there is any purpose to life, then we have been put here at a time when our whole democratic republic, the whole work of the founders, is unraveling. And I'm going to talk about that in some detail in relationship to what I learned from COVID-19. The conference is named after a book by a man named Charles Schwab. Oops, correction. The conference is named after a man named Klaus Schwab. Here's his book, in fact, just get you all reoriented to how real all this stuff is. This is the book, COVID-19, The Great Reset. COVID-19 has, in fact, been the inspiration of totalitarians around the world. And if you go to page 107 of Schwab's book, you'll find that he says that the global reset, globalism in general, is incompatible with a democratic society that is patriotic. So that if there is one strong democratic republic that is patriotic, like ours, then the global reset cannot fully occur. Now, this is an astonishing thing to think about, that he just saw this. Yet it makes complete sense, because to have globalism, to have a global reset, we must discourage people around the world from wanting to be democratic, that is, to have a democratic republic in which the individual freedom is the key. Freedom is the key. In a democracy, freedom is not the key. The voice of the people is the key. In a democratic republic, it's the voice of the people in a context of individual freedom being protected by the government. This is the key. The government doesn't do things to the people for their own good. The government protects the right of the individual to be free as much as possible with our Bill of Rights, our Constitution, the balance also, you know, between the states and the federal government and so on, many different checks and balances built in. Well, if there's one strong country that has a democratic voice, and the voice is the voice of freedom and individuality and free speech, then globalism fails. And interestingly enough, as we'll see, the Chinese Communist Party fails to take over the world. Now, understanding this will give you a better understanding of COVID-19 and what is going on behind it than any other explanation. It's not about the virus. It's not about the need of controlling the virus. It could have been global warming. It could have had a global warming catastrophe. It could be any of the catastrophes that they foresee, massive hunger. They look for a catastrophe. And that's why the title of the conference, mimicking the title of the book, COVID-19 and the Great Reset, is so critical. Now, remember that Joe Biden, our president, has appointed John Kerry to be the czar of the Great Reset. So both of these men have come out in public and they've talked about the great reset that they're going to impose upon the rest of us. Now, John Kerry has something very much in common with Joe Biden. Their families have known each other for years, and the corruption that some of you, many of you listening to this, are aware of in the Biden family is shared with the Kerry family. They're both up to their necks in sucking up to the Chinese communists and getting money in return and business arrangements in return. This is the larger picture that we're looking at. The global predators, in effect, created COVID-19, and we'll get into that in some detail. And they have used COVID-19. And this is what you really need to know. I'm going to mention briefly my book once here, and perhaps at the end. And the book is now for sale, but it won't be out for a number of weeks. And it's COVID-19 and the Global Predators. And the subtitle is We Are the Prey. And I want this information to get out ahead of the book. So the way we've arranged it is that anybody who signs up for the book in advance at a greatly reduced price will immediately by email get the working manuscript so that you can have all of the data in front of you, 400 plus pages of manuscript, 3 introductions by COVID-19 frontline doctors, very proud of having that. And you can have all the backup also for this presentation. It's all in the book. The easiest way to get the book is through www.wearethepray.com. And this is an audience with many religious people in it. And if by reflex you spell pray wrong, my genius wife has reserved that too as an alternative link or URL for you. And that's all I'm going to say about the book, but it's important to get it off my chest, for one thing, because my wife will get really angry at me if I don't bring it up, but also because it's got all the substance of COVID-19 issues in it. Now, I'm going to begin with something that's not in the book in any detail, which is my own work, because if I tell you a little bit of my story, you will learn with me about the global predators. I was at NIMH, having finished my training as a psychiatrist, partly at Harvard, partly at the Upstate Medical Center in New York. I graduated Harvard College. I was pretty much at the top of the food chain in psychiatry. It really is a food chain. And the food are the consumers of psychiatry. But the force and the pressure behind it all is a pharmaceutical industry. And as I was finishing up post my training, 2 years at the National Institute of Mental Health, I was a full-time consultant there. I realized that the psychiatry that I knew, which was a mix of biological psychiatry, social psychiatry, even a political psychiatry, a psychotherapeutic psychiatry, was becoming nothing more than a sales arm of the pharmaceutical industry. And this was 1968. And I could see that if I stayed in psychiatry, instead of being the youngest president in the history of the American Psychiatric Association, I would just have no place at all, because I believed in empowering the individual. I believed that freedom was a big key to life, that liberty and love were the key to life, and that we needed to love one another, and that we needed to respect each other's freedom, and to love God was a growing concept in my mind, but not by any means fully developed as yet, so I'm still working on it. And so I dropped out of as the establishment, essentially, I was asked to stay at NIMH, which is a part of the National Institutes of Health, and I just decided to go into private practice, I thought. So I went into private practice, and I loved it and was enjoying it. Now, just about the same time, a man named Anthony Fauci, it's about my age, I'm 84, I'm going to be 85 in May. Anthony Fauci was joining NIH. So at the time when I looked at NIH and its other institutes, for me, the sub-institute was National Institute of Mental Health. For him, it was NIAID, National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. And I'm seeing that there's no future for anybody who isn't willing to dance to the tune of the pharmaceutical industry, and I'm leaving. And he's entering and will forever after that dance to the tune of the pharmaceutical industry. And he will dance along with Bill Gates and Fauci and many others as really a kind of a henchman or advanced scout, an implementer of the global predatory system that was evolving at this time. Well, it didn't turn out that I would stay in private practice because in 1971, late 71, 72, I discovered the lobotomy was coming back. Lobotomy is brain mutilation. It's done with scalpels. It can be done by boring a hole in the head and putting a poison in. It's been done that way. The main forms of operation when I started to confront it were a combination of using a scalpel and slicing up the frontal lobes, the highest centers of the brain, and then the more modern techniques of boring a hole in the skull, putting an electrode in, burning a hole in the brain. After stimulating, first you play with the patient, you stimulate, and then you burn holes, and this is lobotomy. And I found out that it was coming back full force. And one of the projects that I really became immersed in was that operating on little black children in Mississippi, Jackson, Mississippi, University of Mississippi in Jackson. And that at Harvard, they were doing experiments on white people, but they're getting their funding through very unusual ways, not through the usual ways, but right through Congress. Congress was instructing NIH and instructing the Justice Department to give these guys funds. And why would Congress do that? Because William Sweet and others had testified before Congress. He was, by the way, the most powerful medical physician maybe in the world. He was the head of neurosurgery at Mass General. And he had testified before Congress that ghetto rioters had brain diseases, and if we could develop psychosurgery, we could treat violent people like the ghetto uprising leaders. Incredibly, bizarrely political. I decided that somebody had to stop this. Psychosurgery had kind of died out a bit because the new drugs, the antipsychotic drugs, began with chlorpromazine or Haldol, Thorazine, and now includes Zyprexa and Abilify and Seroquel and Invega and a whole bunch of awful drugs. That these were causing chemical lobotomies, and so for a time they largely replaced surgical lobotomies. But interestingly enough, the surgeons at least realized that the drugs doing so much damage, their surgery probably couldn't do more. Actually, they're just both horrific. Well, when I decided to try to do something about psychosurgery, it was a very different media world than today. The global predators did not control anywhere near what they do now. The progressives in America did not have anywhere near the power they have now, nothing close to it. And because progressives often like things that control people. Kind of, that's 101, isn't it? And the progressives were not yet so involved with big industry as that they would become. So it was a kind of different situation, and I was on all the major media from, you know, Oprah many times, Larry King Live many times, 2020, I mean, whatever there was, I was on it, the morning news, the evening news, talking about, at that time, psychosurgery and then later psychiatric drugs until I was canceled. I was canceled real early cancellation. I got canceled in probably early 1990s at the latest. But I had great access to the media, and I worked with Congress. And I had, again, couldn't be done today. I worked with the Black Caucus of Congress because they were appalled at the operations on little black children, which I found especially appalling. And they were appalled by the remarks of the major neurosurgeons at Harvard and the psychiatrists at Harvard that the ghetto rioters had brain disease and maybe operations were going to really help them. So I was working with the Black Caucus, and then I was working with conservatives. That's when I met my first conservative. I'd grown up in a very Jewish, progressive kind of family, liberal, agnostic. My father was thoughtful in that regard, and he thought himself into being an agnostic. And I'd never met a conservative. I thought they were very evil people. That's what you learn in a Jewish community often, that conservatives are actually evil people. And all of a sudden I'm working with a conservative congressman, Ron Dellums as a black activist congressman, and Lewis Stokes. But I'm working with many different conservatives in the Congress at the time. Senator Bell from Maryland was my own senator, and I went in and I thought I would never get an interview with him, and I did. And I thought he would never support what I was doing because his constituents are NIMH in Maryland. It's all in Bethesda, Maryland, Rockville, and that, you know, his senator. But he listened to me for 10 minutes, described psychosurgery, and he said that's immoral. So I built a coalition of conservatives who felt that mutilating the brain was immoral, and black leaders who saw it as a tool to oppress black people. Where is this going? Here's the key. I expected to get support from the medical scientific community. I expected to get support from the New York Times and the Washington Post. I expected to get support from all kinds of different people in my campaign to stop the return and massive return of psychosurgery. But I didn't. I got the two small groups, a small group of conservatives and a small group of African Americans who were liberals. But not a single neurosurgeon or psychiatrist who was in the establishment supported me. I didn't understand that at the time. I could not figure out as a young man in my 30s why in the world the AMA, the American Psychiatric Association, the journals, why nobody would support what I was doing in the establishment. I hadn't realized yet that the establishment was moving in this dreadful direction of being a kind of loose affiliation of global predators, that they were interested in power and exploitation. So I decided it was just my field of psychiatry. Well, I began to take on electroshock treatment, which is still done. People don't realize it's still done a lot. Oh, by the way, I did. I stopped the resurgence of psychosurgery. I mean, I was able to cut off the funding to Harvard. I was able to convince the one psychiatrist that supported quietly what I was doing, who was at the University of Mississippi, and he worked to stop O.J. Andy, who was the doctor operating down there. I then started to look at electroshock treatment, and again, I could not get any support. I didn't know at the time, I learned soon after, that shock treatment was supported by our federal government, secret support. Finally, I written up in the New York Times, the Justice Department, the CIA, more specifically the CIA in this case, was supporting electroshock treatment. Well, it's only explicable in terms of this kind of global predatory group that is looking at ways to control you. And I mentioned Klaus Schwab. You know, he's transhumanist. He wants to transform the human being into whatever way we can. since there's no soul, there's no God, we can just manipulate that human being whatever way we want. And I had no idea at that point that there was actually a global predatory interest in this kind of technology, which you now see being really developed by a number of globalists are interested in this kind of work. Then in 1992 or 1993, in that area, Prozac changed the face of the world. It was the drug of the year on Time magazine. It convinced Americans to be like patients in mental hospitals, taking drugs all the time. It was a disaster. And I was asked to become the lead, really the only scientist who would do the basic research for all the combined suits against Eli Lilly for Prozac. So now I'm taking on the pharmaceutical industry. There's about 150 cases or more. There's dozens of lawyers. After much searching, they decide I'm going to be their expert to do the scientific research for all their cases. So the cases, that's not class action, but they're combined. And one of the most important reasons to combine them is to have one scientist doing research for everybody. So it's not one suit, another suit. Another reason is to have one or two lawyers in charge of it. And so I began to look at this industry. The more I looked into Eli Lilly and what it was doing with its development of Prozac and what I had done, I realized that there was a collaboration between Eli Lilly and the FDA. And at that point, it was a Republican administration. And the first George Bush had actually been on the board of Eli Lilly at one point. So you see, this is not a Democrat-Republican issue. This is a global predator issue. And all these people, you know, we'll jump right ahead to maybe lose a few of you to Donald Trump. All these people are against Trump because he wants that democratic republic that's patriotic to support that, which is going to stand up to globalism. And all these other people are part of this predatory group who doesn't really love America in the way they say they do. Many of them don't even say it. Most of them don't even say it. I mean, if you look at the Bushes and you look at certainly at Joe Biden right now, he doesn't talk about love of America the way Trump did. He'd be embarrassed too. It would offend all of his global friends. I love the world. Gotta love the world. Not a specific part of the world that has a stunning, unique, never before developed concept, which is government of the people, by the people, and for the people. A democracy with restraints on it to create a democracy of individual freedom. But let me take a breath for a minute. What I found out was that the entire political system would prevent the attempt to bring a successful lawsuit against Eli Lilly for many cases of violence, many cases of suicide. Ginger and I wrote a bestseller about this called Talking Back to Prozac. It was all documented there. I have something about it in the COVID-19 book to give a little filling out. There were a whole bunch of similar drugs coming down the line, and I was sort of trying to put my finger in that dike. I had no idea of the importance of that role. And so when it came then for me to be the expert, the main expert, in the first lawsuit out of this great bunch, I'd been appointed by the whole group of lawyers to be this role. I'd been confirmed by a federal judge in Indiana that I should be this one person. And as we build up toward the lawsuit, my wife, my going to Kentucky for the first big case, it was a multiple murder case, a man who shot up a bunch of people at his workplace after being put on Prozac. Within days after being put on, he becomes psychotic in a more severe way. than he had before. And my wife said, honey, this whole thing is fixed. I said, well, what do you mean? I didn't want to face that. She said, well, the lawyers you're working for, the first one, remember, you quit because you thought that he was somehow corrupt. And then they fired him. The group as a whole fired him. And then they brought you back. And then the new lawyer, who was a very powerful one, died. And now you're dealing with a new lawyer you've never heard of named Smith. And Smith has come to visit you once and then gave you no information and left. And we've gotten no more data since then. The trial's coming up. He hasn't been talking to you at all. You've been researching on your own. This is fishy to me. So I went down there to be in the trial. Usually I'd be in the same hotel as my attorney, so we can communicate a lot. Turned out my attorney is in the same hotel as the Eli Lilly attorneys, and I'm way out remotely. Well, thank goodness things got gummed up a little bit and my testimony was delayed, and I insisted on going into the law office. They did, said, you can work on your own. I'm going into the law office. So I go into the law office and I find that there have been like 25 depositions done. And I'm supposed to have read them all, and I didn't know they existed. They're deposing people about the man's childhood and checkered issues in his childhood. I didn't know that. Eli Lilly had a complete chronology I found they'd written up. The lawyer actually tried to take it away from me. I said, you're not taking this away from me. And I called my wife, and she said, honey, you're up against it. It's fixed. And those of you who are lawyers will really laugh about this. They never practiced my testimony with me. Instead, I sat down with about this consortium, about six lawyers that were there, and I slapped down on a table a whole stack of things. And I said, you can ask me these questions tomorrow. You haven't trained me, practiced with me on this case and what you're going to ask me. You'll do fine. We know you, Dr. Pregan. You can handle any. Wow. The trial was fixed. But I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that this was America. It didn't seem possible to me that the trial was fixed. Actually, my testimony turns out to be this bizarre thing, because in my testimony, I'm literally asking my own questions and answering them. The other side attacks me. No defense is made of me. But I'm doing my best to get the information out. And after my testimony is over, my side's enraged at me. They won't tell me why. So I thought I did a pretty good job. Guys left a lot out. It was awful. Well, I didn't know what had happened, but it was interesting. Two or three jurors would not go along with the verdict of innocence for Lilly. So it was one vote away from a hung jury. But Lilly won. I think it was 9-3 or something like that, 8-11, I don't recall, on the jurors. And I thought it was over. And I was just like I am right now. I was like concussed. A couple of months later, a lawyer said to me, do you know the trial was fixed, that big trial you were in? Here's an article in a small law journal. It's called Kentucky Fried Chicken. This thing was in Louisville. And it turns out that they discovered that the trial had been fixed. My side had been paid off in advance. So I was going up against the combined powers of the lawyer who had collaborated with Lilly, the head lawyer, the third lawyer that they had, who took over. And the entire thing was fixed. And then the media didn't cover the fix. So everybody continued to think that Eli Lilly had cleanly won a trial and that Prozac was okay when it was causing violence and suicide and mayhem and psychosis and mania. It was just, very bad drug. All the SSRIs are really tough drugs, but you can't come off of them. I've written a book called Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal. You can't, if you're a physician or a patient, you need to read a book that tells you about how to come off the drug, because it's dangerous to come off them. So what I had stumbled into and what I didn't realize is that I had stumbled into the globalist enterprise. Now, when we began to do COVID-19, we really didn't want to do it. We didn't want to do it in the worst sort of way. And I was afraid it would just, you know, I was called the conscience of psychiatry. I was afraid all that would be destroyed if I came out and took on COVID-19 as well. I had no idea that many people were ahead of me on taking on COVID-19. And I was used to doing things pretty much alone in the psychiatry field. Okay, I'm going to take a break now. Jackie. Ginge? I'm taking a break at 30 minutes and 51 seconds. I'll be okay. All right, so I'm only 31 minutes into this, Jackie, so I can go another at least 30 minutes. So I can go until the time now is 1:41. So that would be until 2, would be 20. I can go at least until 2:10. And this break is at 30 minutes. That all of the large industries in the world were operating as Eli Lilly was at this point, working with the FDA, working with the government, corrupting the courts, corrupting pretty much anything they could set their sights on, just wanting money and power and influence. And it's not just money, folks, it's also power and grandiosity, wealth, power, grandiosity. I thought it was kind of confined to my area. Then I started to look at COVID-19. Well, why did I overcome fear to pursue truth? Because Ginger brought me an article she'd found. She was researching COVID-19 and something no one was talking about. And it was back in April, early April. It was a 2015 article in which Fauci, it turned out, Anthony Fauci was funding research on how to make deadly COVID viruses. I mean, it's stunning. It still stops my brain from working. Fauci was funding what's called gain-of-function research. What a euphemism. Gain-of-function means making viruses pathologic. So he's taking ordinary coronaviruses, they're everywhere. They're in many animals, they're in humans, they can cause a common cold, they're everywhere. But he was taking viruses from bat caves in China and making them into pathogens. Now, that's pretty bad, but not as bad as the worst of it, which was that he was collaborating with China. He was giving money to individual Chinese scientists. He was giving money to scientific projects in China in which we weren't even involved. He was giving money to collaborative projects with China, and he was giving money directly to the Wuhan Institute, which is a Chinese military biomedical research institute for biological warfare. I mean, that's what the Chinese do. If something pertains to the military, it's taken over by the Chinese communists, for goodness sakes. And Fauci had to know that. There is a concept in China of the, which we didn't know anything about until this past year, the military-civil fusion. Everything civilian that has any importance becomes part of the military, supervised by the military, all the information gained by the military. It doesn't matter whether you're a Chinese corporation or a Chinese research group, but by God, if you're the main Institute of Virology and you're making biological weapons, believe me, you're involved heavily with the Chinese Communist Party. So here's Fauci's doing all this stuff. He's not a patriot. That's a number one signal about these folks. doesn't matter who they are. I mean, just look at some of these global predators. You know, who are they? I'll take a break right now and just go to that. Who are they? They're people I have to learn all about for new. Every one of the top 15 U.S. billionaires, with the exception of Larry Ellison, who's the founder of Oracle, but all the others, Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, the Walmart, who's run now not by the Waltons, but Walmart, Steve Ballmer, Microsoft, Larry Page, Alphabet, that's Google and YouTube, Bloomberg from the New Economic Forum, and Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum, who's a millionaire, not a billionaire, but these are the top people involved. And all of these people lack patriotism. They never proudly sing God Bless America. I've never seen them do anything positive that's really American, that one would just warm your heart toward the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the American military, and so on. And then you look at all the top American corporations, Apple, Alphabet, most of which these men are involved with, Microsoft, Amazon, all of them are involved with, Facebook, and then down a ways Twitter. And they also are all heavily involved with Communist China. They all have big investments, this entire group, not to mention pretty much all the major corporations, folks, all the major corporations. So right in the middle of Trump's administration, when he's taking on China, one of the billionaires, Bloomberg, November 19, holds a conference. And who does he admire and entertain and have with smiling pictures at his conference? Xi Jinping, president in many other roles in China. Who's there? Hillary and Bill, even Kissinger, Yellen, former Fed chief, now Fed chief under Biden. It's just amazing. Prime Minister of India is there. They're all there. Peter Daszak, whom we will be learning more about, perhaps Echo Alliance, Tedros from WHO is there. No one from the Trump administration is there. And the whole theme is to oppose the Trump administration. These are the billionaire predators supporting COVID-19's worst restrictions. They've got one of the major people there, Peter Daszak. They've got the head of the Chinese Communist CDC is there. No Trump people are there. And what are they talking about? Recoupling with China. In the middle of the Trump administration. And then, of course, you've got Klaus Schwab, who we've been talking about. And he holds a conference. Who do you think his speaker is? Who do you think his main speaker is? This is a conference during the administration of Trump. It's, again, the president of China, Xi Jinping. That's where it all goes to, folks. It all starts down low with the progressives in America, and then the Republicans in name only in America. They're all global predators. They all reach up and they fund some of their work one way or another through China. The same thing in the educational system with our big universities that I've tracked down. Harvard's public health began in the Harvard public health began as a collaboration with China, the public health school. It just goes on and on. So then let me go back to Fauci. Well, we decided that we had to overcome fear, Ginger and I, and we had to take on these things directly, these terrible things that were going on in the way of global predation. And we got the word to the administration. We did a video that had about 50,000 downloads. We did also a blog about it. And 2 days later, Trump canceled the collaboration with China. He didn't know enough because he was, I don't think Trump knew the depth of evil. He somehow escaped understanding the depth of the evil that was around him. And he was listening somehow to all these terrible globalists embedded in the government, including Fauci, Pricks, doesn't matter who. They're all there. Head of the CDC, head of the FDA, didn't matter. They were not like him. They were undermining him consciously. By the way, Joe Biden has now reinstated the collaborative research, the funding of China by Fauci. We are back into the total globalism overnight, practically, by Fauci. Now, if we look at what's going on more with COVID-19, it's all a charade. There's no question that the SARS-CoV-2 came out of the China lab. It came out of the Wuhan area. There's a big lab there, and it makes these viruses. And several Chinese scientists who then disappeared, or their art, sometimes they disappeared, or their research disappeared off the internet, said early on, looks like this virus came out of Wuhan. It's clearly got this marker on it. This is hook-like thing that has to be put on to make it infective to human beings. And I had found that research in 2015 that was looking at it, that was developing this. The Chinese were working with the Americans on developing these contact points that would allow the virus to infect a human being. Anyhow, we don't know, I don't know, some people claim, no, I don't know that China purposely let the thing go, but I have a chapter in the book about all the reasons they would have for letting it go, because it's just enforced them mightily. Now, if we look at where the wealth is going during COVID-19, the top 15 American billionaires have gained in wealth by an average of 50% or more. During COVID-19, that's during 2020, from about February and March on. Our 650 billionaires have not done quite anywhere near that well as a group. They've gone up only 16%. But our top 15, some of the names I'm reading to you, their average is up 50% wealth. Now, the Chinese now have 450 billionaires. Their total wealth is, the whole group, the average for the whole group, all 650, is 60%. They've gone up. That's your elite in China. It's your globalist elite in China. That's who's feasting. It's a bizarre situation. So let me just briefly swing through some of the basic issues here about COVID-19. There is no need for masks. There's no science behind the wearing of masks in public or in general preventing COVID-19 from spreading, number one. Number two, there are excellent treatments for early COVID-19, which Fauci has shut down. They involve hydroxychloroquine and other drugs and combinations. I work with these doctors. In fact, three of them are among the doctors who have written the introduction to our book, which I'll mention for the last time, which is COVID-19 and the Global Predators. We Are the Prey, and you can get the book and the manuscript for the book. So the book will be delayed. It's pre-publication, it'll come out in a month or two, but you'll get immediately the manuscript for the book by going either to my website, bregan.com, or two, easier to remember, www.wearetheprey.com, wearetheprey.com. There's no good evidence for even 6-foot distancing, maybe 3 foot some of the time. You just don't want to get sneezed on. That's about it. You're not going to get this from touching things. You're going to get it from getting a real overload in some fashion. And that's how you get these hot spots with the sum of a lot of people close together and a real overload. Somebody's coughing, sneezing. The vaccines are a wild experiment. They're not fully approved by the FDA. They only have an emergency approval basis. And the reason why they have shut down all the treatments is federal law says if you have an effective treatment, you can't use these emergency basis, full speed ahead, new drugs and vaccines. You can't do it. It's not allowed. So these emergency authorizations are not allowed unless you can shut down and make believe that hydroxychloroquine is like dangerous. The way they made believe that hydroxychloroquine was dangerous was by having studies where the patients were overdosed with hydroxychloroquine, literally killing patients. That's in the book, folks. I documented, and I document how clear it is. Studies that were shut down because of overdosing patients were then used by the New York Times and the AMA to say hydroxychloroquine is too dangerous for doctors to use. But if you go to the great textbook of all time, you know, Goodman Gilman's textbook of pharmacology, they describe hydroxychloroquine as the safest drug imaginable. They sort of have a paean to it because it's been around for many decades. It's been used to treat virus disease, been used to treat inflammatory diseases, and of course, been used to treat malaria. Very safe. And then Fauci connives with all the powers in the world to pass on a drug, remdesivir, get it an emergency approval when it's a very dangerous drug. It used it against Ebola, it killed patients. Very dangerous drug, never should have been used again. And he gets it approved on an emergency basis. It can't get approved as the on a final basis, so they can't rush through all the drugs. That requires something called the EUA. It's an emergency use of the drug. The vaccine's much too rushed, much too bizarre of a methodology. It's explained in the book, and you can find it explained in other places as well. It's a total experiment. There have been so many deaths in the United States as of this talk, over 1,000 reported in a voluntary reporting system. And since most of the doctors don't even know who's getting the vaccines, and doctors do a lot of reporting, it's got to be many times 1,000 people have died in association with the vaccine. In Europe, several countries have stopped giving one or another of the vaccines, but the European Union won't stop because it's globalism. It's only the patriotic democracies that are going to stand up on these issues. These globalists, let me just end with a characterization of who they are. They are unpatriotic to their own countries. Even the Chinese communists, they'll kill millions of their own people along the way. All they have to do is refuse to be atheists, be Muslims. They'll put you in concentration camps. So they're not patriotic, they're global. They want a global communist empire. Communism is not a patriotic phenomenon. And what will happen, by the way, is that the people like Bill Gates and Schwab, who are just cozying up, you know, Michael Bloomberg, cozying up the Chinese every chance they can get, pictures with them and so on. Communists are just gonna eat them alive if they weaken America enough. They don't care about those guy billionaires. They'll just take their money away or ruin their money or invent a new money. They don't care about those people. They're just using them. I hate to tell you guys, you're doomed if you succeed. Only if we survive America do we have a chance of surviving, of having a place to run to. We need to get together as Americans. We need to believe in ourselves again. We need to love ourselves. We need to love the Democratic Republic in which we live. We need to honor our founders. we need to build alternatives now, the globalists. By the way, this is not between capitalism. I need to end with that. It's not between capitalism and progressivism. There is no capitalism on an international scale. I mean, that's what I was dealing with Eli Lilly going way back. I didn't understand it. But once you're on a national scale, you're a globalist. You don't care about America. You'll cheat the American legal system the way Eli Lilly did. Yeah, no, you have no concern about that at all. You're into your drug. You're into your international relationships to make a lot of money. So what we're dealing with is not capitalism, it's predatory capitalism. And my idealistic progressive friends, you're not dealing with your idea of what progressivism is. This is just simple predatory progressivism. This kind of progressivism that runs China, runs Honduras, runs Cuba, runs North Vietnam, especially runs North Korea. These are not friendly, nice, loving human beings building a loving world. These are global predators. And we need to unite. And I know that Patrick Coffin is going to just be helping uniting us. He's an expert at that. I'm new at trying to participate in uniting the country. I'm really doing the best I can, at least the half of the country that still believes in the country. But that's what we need to be doing. We need to be building our own book companies, our own media, our own social media, our own medical system as much as possible. I think there are going to be alternatives in that direction. We need to be doing this because the other now has been taken over by, in the U.S., global progressives, but they're really not that important as they think they are, because this is a movement about just being predators. So if you're an idealistic progressive, you're out of this as much as idealistic conservatives. You're out of this loop, folks. So unite with us for liberty. Unite for you for liberty. That's where we are today. And I think that that's a really good place to end. Let us unite for liberty. Thank you very, very, very much. No, Jackie, at the end, I'm going to go on a little more. Now, I have a few minutes left. So I want to comment at this point on who they are in their thinking, because they're different from us. These kind of folks don't ask you, who are you? Implying there's a who present, a being, a force, an agent, a source of love. I like to think of human beings as ultimately sources of love, and we need the freedom to love and create, because love thrives in freedom. They have no such concepts in their head. You read Klaus Schwab, you look at the videos by anybody, Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, Zuckerberg, it doesn't matter. Or these companies, these major companies, they're just not into liberty. They're not into love in a genuine way. They're interested in pandering to the masses with progressive veneer while they eat them alive, either as global predators from the left, like the communists, or global predators from the right, like these corporations. They're beyond left and right. They just come together in this predatory place. It's like all the demons of the world, like they've all come together. I love the way Patrick Coffin talks about that in some of his speeches. Demons of the world, they are upon us. And we really need to know that they don't have the faintest idea about us, because they don't feel patriotism. They don't feel a genuine love for other human beings. They do not treasure human beings. They do not believe in God. Without believing in God, it's hard to treasure human beings. It's possible, but it's very difficult without a belief in something that invests human beings with the breath of God, the Spirit of God. They have no fundamental ideology that overrides their being predators. I don't believe even the Chinese communists have an ideology that overrides their lust for power to have a communist Chinese empire. This is what has happened in the world. This is what has happened in the world. And there's no way that we, as folks who are fighting for liberty, are going to survive against this kind of unleashed predation, this kind of limitless warfare by the Chinese communists, limitless undermining, what they call unrestricted warfare, which, by the way, led one Chinese dissident who escaped, Dr. Yan, to actually say that she believed that the virus had been purposely let loose as a form of unrestricted warfare, which is a principle of Chinese military, unrestricted warfare against the United States. So remember again an early theme that the United States is all that stands between them and the abuse and control and exploitation of all of humanity. Europe doesn't know this. Africa doesn't know this. The only folks that really know this are the Chinese communists, and they talk about it, folks. They talk about it among themselves. It's us against them. We don't even know it, but they know it. Now, we need to know it, and we need to gather together, to join together, to bless each other in standing up to these people. And in this process, we need, by the way, to just utterly discard the COVID-19 restrictions. We really need to put an end to them. People who are vulnerable are mainly older people, and especially older people who don't know there are good treatments. That's another thing I want to end with. All you have to do is to go to the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, AAPS.com, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, and you're going to see a blue book there. And two of the three authors wrote introductions to our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators. And you will find out where to get doctors and where to get treatments. Because if you're actually getting treatments, then these vastly inflated death rates, which are really much lower than you think even, but the vastly inflated death rates for older people of 5 or 8% if you have multiple illnesses, even that drops way down if you get the proper treatment. So don't let them terrorize you. Children are just fine. They're not going to die from this. There are no definitively documented deaths of children. We can open our schools. We can open our society. We older folks need to be a little more cautious, take care of each other, but not close down the society because of us. And if we're aware of the proper protective treatments, there are treatments we can take in advance. There are treatments that we can take when the illness strikes us. So America, we need to be free again. Get together, join together. Let us be free. Let us fight for our freedom. Let us thank God to be here today in this amazing place where, like I have done and so many others have done, especially us doctors in the COVID-19 area, where we've just gone into whole new areas, many of us, whole new areas. I mean, you know, one of the people that I'm working with closely was essentially working with the medicine for women during their life cycles, and then men, Dr. Liv Leet, and now she's become a COVID-19 frontier doctor as well as doing that kind of work. She wrote the third introduction to the book. The first is one of the three doctors. Drs. McCullough, Peter McCullough, and Vladimir Zelenko. You can see I'm getting tired. And Elizabeth Lievely, V-L-I-E-T. Well, a lot of us have just stopped what we were doing before to a great extent, not entirely. We all, I'm sure, keep doing some stuff. I still see patients. But join us. Join with all the people in America that are building a ground roots, ground grassroots based freedom movement. Join us. Thank you very, very much for this time. And I want to thank Patrick Coffin one more time. You're doing a great job. Thanks a lot. Dr. Peter Bregan saying goodbye now.